How does the Christian who believe the truth is absolute, not relative, communicate that in a world that buys into complete relativism and do so in a way in which we don't appear to be ignorantly dogmatic? We're going to discuss do's and don'ts of communication on the issue of truth and the fact that it is absolute as opposed to relative with Dr. Art Lindsley, author of a book called True Truth, which is an InterVarsity book. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Dr. Lindsley, you've been on before discussing the book itself, giving us an overview, but today we're going to have you back on just to discuss some of the practical ways in which we can communicate this. So thank you again for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you here, Jerry, and I think it is a very important thing. I mean, it's one thing to have the theoretical argument, as you just mentioned, which basically in true truth is that there's the impossibility of justifying any kind of objective morality without God, and you have to look to the book to be able to address that. But there are a lot of practical things you need to address, because very rarely, if ever, you're going to have a chance to present a whole argument to people, and so you need to take whatever time you have available to be able to go forward. And I just wanted to give a couple principles, and you're certainly welcome to jump in on these thoughts as I go, but just let me give you a couple things, and if you want to ask any questions, be free, of course, to do so. One thing, I think, is to really listen to a person when they really raise an objection, like on absolute truth or that kind of thing. I would say listen in the sense that you don't necessarily answer the first question asked, because people will rarely tell you the real root issue for their disbelief.
Okay, give an example of that. Give an example. In other words, they're creating a smokescreen. Maybe it's like the woman on the well at the well with Jesus.
Exactly.
You know, she brings up, he says, call your husband. I don't have a husband. Yeah, that's right. You've had five husbands or whatever it is. And but she then brings up some sort of, well, you know, we Samaritans think, blah, 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 but you Jews think, blah, blah, blah. What is your opinion, sir? You know?
Well, she
changes the subject, in other words.
People going to use the standard objections, you know, the church is full of hypocrites or faith in Christ is too narrow, that kind of thing. And, you know, you can listen to that, and it's valid to answer the question, but you might want to stop and just say a second, okay, I'll try to get around to that in a minute, but tell me some of your other questions that you have first, and we'll try to sort out which place to start. And maybe after really listening to them a little bit, you can really, by gently questioning, get to the root issue. Maybe it's some kind of pain they've had through the suffering of a parent or a loved one in some way, or who knows what it is that's really at the root. Maybe they've been treated really poorly by Christians or by churches, Christianity. And so that might be the real issue emotionally. And the intellectual is what they put out there. Somewhat, it can be a smokescreen, but it can also be something that justifies their unbelief when they have a deeper root issue that's involved. So if you just listen for a while empathetically and try to get to the real issue, or get to a root issue anyway, you don't want to hack off a branch when you can try to get to the root. So that's a really important rule that I would have. Second one would be to be fair, and that requires a lot of listening. Like I would say, be able to state the other person's position to their satisfaction before you respond. Again, be able to state the other person's position to their satisfaction before you respond.
So in other words, you would say, so you would say, okay, if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is you don't believe in Christ because blah, 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 you know, whatever. But just respectfully restating what they've said.
Yeah, making sure. And then they say, well, you didn't quite get that right. You know, here's what it is. And so you try to state as fairly as you can what you hear the person saying, and they can correct it. So you're addressing the issue and question that they have. And sometimes, again, you have to really listen carefully to be able to understand that. But that's real important that you be fair and not just be reactive or defensive or pulling up a caricature of their view.
Yeah.
And if they're caricaturing yours, you don't want to do that to theirs. And you want to at least listen to the nuance. Like if someone's an atheist or relativist, you want to put them in the box with every other relativist. If someone's a New Ager and is relativist, you want to listen to their own unique spin on it first before you try to address it. You don't want to just I know that view and go to a quick answer without really listening carefully to the way that that person puts it together.
So, because in other words, you don't want to say, oh, so you're an atheist. Oh, so was Stalin, and he killed 20 to 40 million people.
Exactly.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Well, I remember one young man I talked to was a pastor's son having real difficulties, and a lot of his objections were very secular, right? I listened to him actually for about 3 hours, but there were a lot of things where he loved, you know, had experiences with God or loved going to the church, and there was a real tension between certain things that he loved and believed and really what he was saying intellectually. And when I was able to really address the root issue, a lot of the superficial objections fell away, and we were able to get down to a real issue. So sometimes it requires real listening to get to that place.
Yeah.
I would say another thing is to have a right attitude. There's the classic passage in 1 Peter 3:15, to be able to give a reasonable defense for the hope that's in you. It says, yet with gentleness and reverence. So gentleness is important, not be reactive or defensive. And reverence could be either viewed as respect or reverence towards God, or respect or reverence towards the other person that's made in the image of God. But whichever way you take that, if you're doing it respect for God, obviously you're going to respect his image bearer too, because if you disrespect the image bearer of God, that's in many ways rejecting or dishonoring God in some way. So just showing respect towards God in the faithfulness in the way you carry out that conversation, or just respecting the dignity of the person, even though you really disagree with them on the point that's there, that they're a human being made in the image of God, and so treating them with a kind of respect as an image bearer of God. So I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Kind of precondition. One more thing I think that's important is to really be able to discern on what level someone is open or closed. Mm. That I kind of view it as a spectrum, you know, from the left to the right. If someone is totally open, then I suppose you can present a real direct kind of argument or have time to present your position more fully. But when somebody's closed, totally closed, obviously you can't even begin the conversation. But usually people are somewhere in between those two. So you might have a window, and it could be a few seconds, it could be a minute, that you can maybe, if they're open at least to hear for that long, you can use something that's there. And I've got various approaches that I use for that, like sometimes little quotes that I have that can maybe provoke them to think, or questions you can ask that often questions will rattle around in somebody's brain longer than an answer. But if you have time to talk to somebody, what Francis Schaeffer really advocated is that you take the roof off of that person's position. That it's like taking a roof off of a house, and then you see the various rooms that people live in. And basically, he basically said, if you had an hour with a non-believer on a train, you might spend 45 minutes addressing that person's worldview and showing them where it leads. Like with atheism, I think it ultimately leads to meaningless, a lack of dignity, morality, certainly immortality, that kind of thing that you have as an implication of atheism. You can kind of push them towards a logical conclusion of their false assumptions, or you can push them towards an adequate basis for their highest aspirations. And I've got a couple illustrations for that.
Okay.
Maybe one case was I had a friend, Mike Marshall, who was in a PhD program down at University of Virginia, and Richard Rorty was there, the big postmodern philosopher. He was in classes with him. But one time in between class, there was a woman who was an atheist but had a Jewish heritage. And he said to her, I can prove to you believe in absolutes. She said, no.
Well, wait. I'm confused. Let's separate who's who. Is Marshall a Christian? No, Marshall's a
believer. Marshall's a believer. He was in that class.
Oh, so Marshall's an example of what to do. Okay, I see. Okay, yeah, so Marshall's speaking. Okay, got it. Okay.
He was in the class, and there was a woman there that was a postmodernist and a real Rorty groupie.
Right. All right.
And basically, he was saying to her, I can prove to you you believe in absolutes. Because she had said, I don't need. And she said, no, you can't. Said, yes, I can. I'll give you two. She was a feminist, too. And she said, he said, rape and Holocaust. You know, so as a feminist and as a Jew by heritage, I mean, those were two things. She said, you're right. And she realized that she had no basis to believe in these absolutes. So that deep down, there was a real tension in her position, what she held theoretically. She didn't hold actually. And that's the truth with many people that maybe deny absolutes or claim to be a relativist or postmodernist, but you see them out on the picket line screaming and yelling about evil on whatever issue it is, you know, or speaking about injustice, particularly in the social arena. They want to preserve that relativism for their own private lives. But when it comes to public life, it's rare that people can remain neutral on the big political issues of our age. So they're relativists in personal life, but not in public life.
Finish the thought.
I was just going to give you another illustration of that. That Marty Kies, who was up at Boston Labrie, she's a strong believer, and she used to go around to some of the colleges in the Northeast, you know, they were very secular. And she used to speak on a Christian perspective on feminism. And, of course, many people were there ready to really jump on her with a very hostile attitude. But what she argued is something along these lines, that a lot of she would agree with many of the bright insights of feminism and the abuse many times of women's dignity and worth and value and mistreatment throughout the ages, that kind of thing. But then she'd say, it's interesting that a lot of the chosen views that feminists have don't have any real solid basis for saying that these things are wrong or evil. Certainly within atheism, you don't have that. And within the New Age movement, there's no basis for making a valid distinction between good or evil. And neo-paganism, Wicca, or the craft, really rages against the idea of absolutes. So it's really the sometimes despised Christianity that has the basis for saying that these things are wrong or evil. So if you're a feminist, you need to be able to say that these real abuses are something really wrong. And often in these other worldviews, you don't have a basis to do it. And Christianity is really the root for addressing feminism. The first feminists met in a Methodist church up in New York, and there was a real history of people that have stood up for women in terms of sexual trafficking and the foot binding, and the sati in India, and many other examples of Christians that have really fought for the dignity, worth, and value of women. Now, the church has a checkered history, certainly, with regard to the way they've addressed women. But really, the antidote is in none of these other worldviews. If you want to uphold your feminism, there's a tension. You can't hold both postmodernism and feminism at the same time, or even relativism and feminism at the same time.
All right, we have 45 seconds later. I don't know where the time went. TIFWE.org for more information to learn about Dr. Art Lindsley. But I'll give you 30 seconds to close on the whole idea of true truth.
Well, I think that it's just really important to not only be able to state these things, but also to practice your faith. I mean, often love is a great way to be able to make a difference. In fact, C.S. Lewis said, what we practice, not save at rare intervals, what we preach is usually our greatest contribution to the conversion of others. There's certainly a place for giving reasons, but the way, the manner in which you engage, the kind of love you show will be of ultimate importance.
Wow. Dr. Art Lindsley, thank you again for being with us. All the best.
Thank you.